Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest, Robert Chun. Robert is a master business coach who has spent more than 26 years perfecting his proactive business coaching process. He's been coaching and consulting since 1988, before there was even a business coaching industry. So you could say he is one of the pioneers of this industry. And I am very, very excited to have him on the show. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you for having me be here. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So you have an interesting story. You were born in...
I was born in Seoul, Korea, 1962. And my story is that one day my father came when I was 9 years old and told my mom to go to America because education, they were free. There were a lot more opportunities. My mom basically said, "You're crazy. Why would we want to go to another country and start over?" And my dad said, "Because we want to," and he did. And I came here in 72 and grew up here and became a business coach because I took this course, believe it or not, called, at the time it was called something else, but the course was called Forum Forward. And in the course, they talked about world being the way it is and people needing to be responsible for getting better. And I was a very young person at the time. And so I said, you know, I want to be responsible for people being able to raise families. And to do that, you need to have income. And the only way to be free above all racial issues and so forth is by having a business. So at that moment in time, I said, I'm going to be building a lot of small businesses. And then I ended up meeting my mentor after I graduated from college. And that's what I've been since 88, coaching, consulting small businesses and building organizations and affiliates.
So what was the thing you did when you came? I want to go back to Seoul, Korea. But before that, when you said the Forum Forward, how old were you when you discovered that?
I think I was like 22 years old, 23 years old.
Okay.
A friend of mine came and said, "You gotta do this thing." And the original course was called the EST. And I took the EST training because a friend of mine came and said, "You gotta do this." And I put $50 down and I ended up doing a lot of yard work to raise the rest of the money and doing the course. It was an interesting course, but I've been participating in the EST and Landmark Forum ever since, on and off.
Okay. All right. So we'll get back to that. Now let's go back. I know you were, for your first 9 years, you were in Seoul, Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said your father said he was going to come here. Did he come here by himself first?
Yes, he did for a year. What happened was he knew Bob Lewis from U.S. Attaché. And they became drinking buddies in Vietnam. My dad tried to open restaurants in Vietnam. Didn't work out. And so other drinking buddies, they drank almost every night. They said, "Why be? You got to take your kids, go to America. There'll be so much opportunities there." Eventually, Bob Lewis, my godfather, wore him down. That's the true story. And then we ended up moving here.
Okay, so your dad's, so just set this up again. He's still in Seoul, Korea, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Lewis says?
Yeah. Bob Lewis was attaché attached to the U.S. Embassy.
Oh.
And they were friends from the Korean War days.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
they were.
The one that said.
Nudged my dad. And my dad, once he made up his mind, nobody could stop him. And me, my dad, My mom, four other kids all came from LA.
Wow. And did he have a job
No, not at all. We just came and we looked for an apartment. My mom's, to this day, she passed, mom and dad passed away, but to this day, I think even before he passed away, he thought my dad was crazy at the time. And he got a job at a fish and chip store with an old Jewish guy who couldn't sell the store because it nobody wanted, it was not profitable. So my dad said, look, I'll take over, co-sign for me. If it doesn't work out, take it back. So we went to, I think, Wells Fargo at the time. And we got a loan, and we got a fish and chip store. That's how we began our adventure in America. Little restaurants where whole family works, and it works because there's no payroll except for my dad, right? So as a result, we were able to, you know, grow and build and little small chain of restaurants for fish and chips. So imagine Korean guys working, mom, dad, me, and my sister working in a restaurant, cleaning, making fish and chips. And I learned about America in the most interesting way. It was at the corner of Fairfax and Santa Monica. In it's the place is gone now. It's Whole Foods, HP, Alpha Beta there. And I remember being exposed to different Americans, you know, blacks, whites, Mexicans, getting fish and chips. I guess, you know, people buy the how much fish and shrimp they will buy. And one day, this most beautiful lady came along and got five pieces of chips and fries, right? And I said to myself, God, there is heaven. I'm like, I don't know, 11. I go, uncle was working with his uncle. This is the most wonderful country in the world. It has beautiful men like this coming to a place like this and getting fish and chips. My uncle said, well, you'd love to learn. What do you mean? She's totally beautiful. God, you know, says, Bob, she is a guy. What? But uncle. So anyway, I learned a lot working in the fish and chip store because we got all kinds of people coming in, right? And then by the appearance, you couldn't tell. And I was being so young and impressionable. I shouldn't have worked there that's that young, right? But because of that, I got to meet all kinds of people, all wonderful people, just very unique in their ways. So it was a growing experience learning about everything.
And how long did your dad have? So he expanded or?
Well, he expanded until my sister got married a Jewish guy. Ken, Ken in, and he ended up working for Gensler in Massachusetts. And well, as soon as our first niece was born, my mom and dad sold everything, packed up, and became a permanent babysitter in Massachusetts. You snooze, you lose, you know? I didn't get married till later. So she, her kids got the benefit of my mom and dad all the time.
So they just sold. Wow. After how many years?
30 plus years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's what they do.
Wow.
Crazy,
okay.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So y'all came here. That's what y'all did. Mm-hmm. And you said there was a Jewish guy, a grandmother, Mrs. Levinson. How did she factor in to the story?
Okay. So, God, you're asking me too many questions, but I'll tell you anyway. So what happened was in 72, my dad tried to rent a room in Santa Monica, West LA area. And we were living in motels at the time. And nobody would take families or kids. So after a week or so of that, he lied to this lady and said, it's just me and my wife. And then we snuck in at night, five of us. And basically, Dad said, don't be so loud. It went on for months. And one day, there was a knock on the door. Yurim and I opened the door, and it's Mrs. Levinson. and she said, hi, kids. More scared. She was really nice. She was this long pipe and a cigarette, right? Like the old days. Like in a cartoon, we were scared. And she said, oh. You guys are playing here. It's okay. But, you know, my place is so much bigger. You should come and play over here. She seems nice. So we went. All of us went. So come 6, 7 o'clock, there's a knock on the door. It's my dad. This is Levinson. By any chance, you see kids running around here by some chance? YB? No, on the streets running around? No, I haven't seen any of them. And then Mrs. Levinson said, I'm sorry. It's like, Mrs. Levinson, I would tell you a story. And I think my sister John and Jay came out and says, Dad. And Mrs. Levinson said, YB, why don't you come? You got to tell me. I got a scotch for you. Got a Johnny Walker here for you. So why don't you have a sip? Let's talk. Kids, go and play. Anyway, till his dying days, Johnny Walker was his best scotch ever. Scotch was ever.
But was she the landlord? She was the landlord?
Landlady.
Landlady. That had that he had said he didn't have kids with, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But she became our grandmother, and she became our babysitter, and we would go to her after school.
But so he had lied, but it was fine. She was cool.
Wow. Yeah, thanks to her, we stayed there for many, many years before going to Los Feliz.
Yeah. Wow. That's nice. It's a nice story. Okay. So back to you. So you grow up. You're working at the fish and chips. You go to college.
I go to UC Davis. I worked my way through school. Yeah.
And what did you study there?
Originally, it was pre-med, but I could not pass the second semester of organic chemistry. So I changed, and my grades suffered, and I stuck around, and eventually I graduated with a degree in psychology.
Okay. And did you, when you graduated, you said, you know, you went and did the S, but before that, what did you think you were going to do?
I thought I was going to be a therapist, and after graduation, with a bachelor degree, you couldn't get a real job, but I ended up doing some behavior modification program studies and residential places, and I found that it was all business more than healing people. And I was very disappointed because I was very idealistic at the time, so I thought, you know, people are doing it out of altruism, but not really. It was a business to run X number of kids and people through the system. And I left there, and my dad was horribly upset because went to school for 6 years, worked my way through school, changed major, and couldn't get a real job. And when I finished that stint, I tried to, at the time, believe it or not, be a management trainee at Sears and JCPenney. I thought, might as well. But they said, you know, you're 2 years older than our regular people apply after college, so you're not going to go. So I was lost. And my dad was horrified and upset, you know, because you put a son through school, and you know, he works too, but, you know, you do hard work, but nothing comes out of it. So I ended up working at UCLA, Multax Metrics, Kanto Corporation, you know, just wandering around. But I met my mentor, Stephen Gabriel. I was a receptionist at a place called Landmark Education Center in Santa Monica, Los Angeles. And that changed my life.
He was the receptionist?
No, I was the receptionist. This nice man wearing a nice clothes approached me, and I says, hi, this is so-and-so. Can I help you? Can I route you? And he said, no, but I want to talk to you. I said, okay. So he basically told me what my name was. He knew I went to college. He knew what I studied. You know, but he was just very checking. It was like checking on me, like, you're this person, right? Basically, I said yes. He said, you know, Robert.
How did he know that? Had you told him?
Apparently, I don't know. He knew.
Wow.
He said, you know, I started a consulting company recently, and I would love to have you as my client. I said, why? Basically, are you sure? And he said, sure. And he gave me a car, so at this place. And, you know, he said he could help. So I said, look, I just need to get a real job and be functional. And he said, sure. And he helped me and charged me. I remember the price, $100 a month. I was going there every week, crying and doing the stuff and eventually getting a decent job. buying and selling old cassette stuff at a recycler, buying, you know, doing stuff, and, you know, became stable. And then one day he said to me, Robert, you're not going to keep going this way. What do you want to do with your life, really? I really want to help you. And I said, Stephen, I want to be like you because you don't seem to work that hard and you got all these things. Stephen said, it's a little bit harder than you think. And I said, okay, but I would love to learn if I could. He said, well, if you can work really hard for, say, 10 years, you'll learn all the stuff that I know and you'll be able to have a business. And I said, Stephen, you don't know me well. I'm going to work really hard. I can learn everything in 3 years. He looked at me with a razor thin eyes for a second. He says, Robert, you're so stubborn. It's going to take you 30 years before you learn everything. But you want to try it? You can do it. I said, great. And then he raised my rate to $200. I was shocked, but I had the pride. So I paid the $200, came back for a month. Then he raised to $400. And I just was like not letting down that I didn't have that kind of money. So and he doubled to $800. And I said, Stephen, I cannot keep on going because I don't have that kind of money. He just laughed and said, I just want to see how far you will go. And they said, come on next week. So I got excited. I stood up and sat and destroyed his wooden chair. And the next time I came back, the wooden chair was replaced by a steel chair. And rest is history because I learned everything from him. And along with him.
Were you still paying him at that point?
No, he said, I don't want you to ruin your money. Your money's out here.
So you were, but he wasn't paying you to learn.
No.
Did he pay you to work there? No.
No. And I was just apprenticing, basically, like I was like any metalsmith or a wood chopper or whatever, or ceramics tile person. I was learning consulting from him, and I would come up with interesting ideas. He would show me things, show me drawing pictures, and this would be where it starts out from nothing to something, the process. And all this stuff. And he would go over things over and over again, but keep on showing up. And he found out later on that I was taking on small, tiny clients on my own. And he said, why are you wasting time on these people? You know, I'm teaching you corporate consulting. These people are not even corporations. Really, they're individuals. They're like tradespeople, handymen. You know, I said, Stephen, you have all those connections. I don't. So they're business people. They provide promises for goods and services. They provide those. And they're good people. I'm like their coach. Mm-hmm. So what did I call this thing? I'm going to call it business coaching. He said, Rob, I don't think it's going to ever work. You know, you'll make it. But if you really want to do this, go out there and talk to people about it. And do it for a year and I'll help you. But you gotta tell people, three people per day, and you gotta share what it is and figure this out. So I did that. After a year, he said, okay, I'll help you. And then I never looked back since.
Wow. So were those small clients at the beginning, were they paying you?
Very little amounts, like $15 a month, $150 a month. But I was, you know, I was more committed to them succeeding than anything else. Mm-hmm. And because I saw myself in them, you know, and I just had to learn new things. So they became my guinea pigs, too.
Yeah.
And then I wanted them. Yeah.
Right. Like, what's this? Like, what's one story that you helped? Like the tree guy or the.
Okay. So there was a guy who was in chiropractor, and he was using acupuncture as well, and he was trying to promote, and he was having a hard time. So we came up with this concept of testing people for blood, you know, blood slide looking at a microscope. What we noticed was that people within chiropractic acupuncture would not test people every 3 months, 4 months to see how they're doing. So we came out with this little card We passed it around the neighborhoods on the Santa Monica, and his business grew because we're the, at the time, this was in early 90s, only little chiropractic acupuncture place that would regularly test people for results.
What kind of results were they?
Energy, oxygenation, how the blood works, how healthy the bloodstreams were, all kinds of stuff, a lot of woo-woo stuff. But it's just that a lot of people during those days were doing integrated medicine, but we didn't call it that at the time. And then, but they would, nobody would test people to see if they got better or to have a scientific little graph that shows you are here, but you're there now. You were feeling this way, and now you're there. So I incorporated measurements into acupuncturists and chiropractors at the time, and it made a big difference because it created credibility to people who didn't have any at the time because they were considered less than.
So if they improved, it was a result of the chiropractic or
acupuncture. Right, we could show that.
I didn't know that they had anything to do with the blood.
Yes, but blood, wow. Nutrition, all of it. So
it was bigger than that.
Yeah.
It was bigger than
that. So we were able to monitor their health, energy, vitality, and learn, some of my clients, I had them learn how to read cholesterol, how to read all these things that the only doctors used to do. This was late 80s, early 90s at the time.
Wow.
So that was useful. And other times what would happen is I would get situations like, Robert, I'm calling you because I got to close my shop down. Why do you want to hire me? Well, they're like my family. I got to fire them all. And I go, why? Well, we ship and sell sewing machines and manufacturing for clothing factories in Los Angeles area at the time, breaking jackets and stuff. But the main company in Midwest is shutting down. So there's no more machines. So I got to fire people and I can't do it. So I said, at the time I was short of cash and everything. So I can't take it on. And I walked into this beautiful, huge warehouse and there were machine parts all around. I said, why are these here? Well, because, you know, the company in Midwest was very slow in responding. So we had to fix the machines ourselves for customers. And I wandered around. I taught him how to manage 450 items at a time and things like that. And I said, is it okay if we don't fire people? He said, of course, but it's impossible because there's no more machines. They're not manufacturing anymore. They're going bankrupt. And I said, trust me, you're paying me money. He says, okay. So we waited for the Midwest factory to shut down. We waited for all the companies to shut down. And we got all the salespeople together. They thought I fired them. And I said, no, we're going to be selling them lease and maintenance contracts to all the customers because there's no more machines. All the machines are not in the factories, but they put six figures in. It's a lot of money during those days into the machines, but there's no way to fix them anymore. No one to take care of them anymore. So I want you to go to all your customers, your competition's customers, and they come up with a leasing and maintenance programs. So they went from like, oh my God, we're going to lose our job to like, let's get busy. And the maintenance people who was at the lowest level of totem pole in that company became the highest.
Wow.
So
I'm trying to follow it. So, okay. There were no more machines being
but
made.
Except for, yeah, but they were all in cities and places nearby, LA and California, Arizona, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But nobody's maintaining them because the original factory's gone. Everything, all the maintenance is shut down.
Okay.
And then
So they started selling maintenance because they knew how to do it.
They had to because the factory was slow and lazy at the time. At least those are their words.
Wow.
So
amazing.
They were happy. And then, of course, they were the only ones how to program the damn machines. So the company evolved eventually into a software kind of company.
Were these like huge, big machines?
By my standards, yes.
It wasn't like a
You know,
sewing machine that
you cut things, you sew things, you know, those kind of machines, yeah.
So it was big. It was a big machine.
Yeah, pretty big, but it's really small compared to the other ones.
Yeah, wow. So then they went into software. That's amazing.
Yeah. So what we do is we find a way, we find the pivot to make things work. There's always a path I discover out of that job. There's always a way to find where you want to go. So that's what I learned from that.
Wow. So yeah. Obviously you were looking at it from a different way than the owner, who was kind of stuck in his paradigm, right?
Right, because, you know, if you get rid of all the employees and stuff, at least you can retire, you have a chance to survive, which is understandable,
yeah.
Because there
yeah.
was no hope, right?
Right.
What are you going to do? A bunch of salespeople, cannot sell the right machines. What are you going to do? You're going to get some other machines in there, but you cannot retool and change fast enough. So there's a rational move. I was an irrational person.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay. All right. So you were shadowing Steve. You started your business. After a year, it was making money,
mm-hmm.
right? And then he said he would help you. So did he help you after that?
Well, he goaded me on. He would say things like, if you're a real consultant, you would do this. Or, where is your army? You're not making enough money. You're the laziest person in the world. And he would like push me. And me being a young 20-some-odd-year-old person, I would go like, Steven, I'll show you. He said, okay, show me. So he manipulated the hell out of me to produce results. And, you know, I think it was like 50-something at the time, and he was like 20, 30 years senior to me. And he was like a monk, but a really smart, caring, tough monk, right? And but I was all wrong, because on his 55th birthday, I said, no, 55th birthday, that's right. I went to Bel Air Hotel for an event, and there were five other people like me, all different races, different fields, manufacturing, software, real estate. I was the consultant, and they were all there with their wife and girlfriends. And we all looked at each other. It's like, how long have you been with Steven? Really? So it was like a shock to meet yourself in different race, different color, different, you know, age and configuration in that event. And what shocked us was he was going to put on a cigar like he always do. And this woman appears and lights the cigar. It's Yang Ming Ko, one of the most successful consultants all of us knew at the time. And she was his girlfriend. So it just blew all of our mind that night. Because
was he married?
No, he was divorced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, he made a statement on his birthday.
He made a what statement?
Yeah, because all of us thought he was like this single guy living his monastic life. All of them. And that we all knew at the same time, kind of like, we've been had. But in a good way. In a good way.
Yeah.
So it was.
Now, did he profit from helping you at all, or he was just doing it out of the goodness of his heart?
Well, he never charged any of us any money.
So he was just like your mentor, like
for us. Mentor. He was like our second father or mentor for us.
Wow.
Yeah. So I got very lucky. My whole life became because of him.
Wow. Amazing. Okay. All right. So we're going to go to our little commercial break now.
Sure.
And then we're going to come back and talk about what you've been up to recently and how people can find you and all that good stuff. So we're going to go to our sponsor.
Thank you. Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your children, to schools, to your companies, go to KikoriApp.com and schedule a consultation. And if you're stuck in any area of your life, or you're not really free to speak up and talk, go to RealTalkWithHillary.com and schedule time with me. And we will start having more fun and get you freed up creating a life you love. Also, if you want to subscribe to my newsletter, every week there's links and stories and all sorts of really cool stuff. You can find that at gettingrealwithhillary.com and just subscribe to my newsletter. It's free and it's really great, if I do say so myself. All right. And here we go. We're going to welcome back Robert Chun. Welcome back, Robert. Okay, so what stories have we missed? I know, you know, we didn't cover your dad who was ex-military, but, you know, we've already covered your business. What else do you want to tell people? What, I know there's a lot of people who are small business consultants. A lot of people, you know, want to coach me, consult with me. They all want my money. And, how would you say, I mean, I know you're different, but how would you describe, what is different about what you do than what the rest of the world does?
I think what makes me and other people at Train different is we go at the pace that our clients can go in. We work with people the way they are, and we don't change anything. We add, retract knowledge. We add or subtract people or structures so that transformation is easy. Transformation has delight and joy to it versus hard. See, we've been taught that growth is hard because it consists of training and development and building stuff. Our approach is different because we add things. We add parts and pieces that are missing. So we give people more completeness or wholeness. So let me give an example. Right now, we're in a law firm. There's 20 people in the law firm. They close, they have a marketing company they spend 5 figures on, and they close 6 cases per week. Wonderful, right? And what I notice is in the process, there is no customer service. None. So I took one of the receptionists with everybody's permission. Actually, he wanted to go up. So we said to him, basically, you can move up. But you got to replace yourself at the lower level as receptionist. You have to learn these new softwares and develop these things. And I want you to go back and follow up on people. So now that company that used to produce 6 deals per week is producing 8. 10 deals per week. Now, it seems so simple, right? Because all I happened was I took somebody, reception, taught them how to be a customer service, how to do the intake in a slightly different way. But what happens is that change over causes a big change because now the company has grown. When you go from 6 to 10, how big is the change? Tell me. It's a lot, right? Like 30 to 60% change. So without changing anything else in infrastructure, we grew the company 60% in 2 months.
Wow.
Pretty fun, right?
That one little change had them grow 60%. Wow.
Yeah, because
now they like you.
Oh, they love me.
Yeah.
We teach people how to be their job. So we have a 37-year-old new COO who doesn't understand her job fully in her position organization. They have a 62-year-old attorney who browbeat her, basically. And she comes to me semi-upset and said, what do I do? I says, look, you're being a 37-year-old female with 20, 15, whatever years of experience. But what you want to be, you should be the chief operation officer of your company. And let me show you what they do. 2 weeks later, and she said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So what happened? Well, I went from being 37-year-old person to the COO, which is ageless. I put on the hat position. And the lady who used to browbeat me now follows my lead because I speak facts. Hey, this is what happened. She goes into how little I know about law. I said, that's okay. I don't think about law, but these are the numbers. You said X, you produce Y. I'm here to help you get to X. You can talk about my qualifications if you want to, but that's not my job. So she changed the whole relationship because she understands her job. I tell her, if you understand technology, if you understand your position administration, you will always be free and powerful because they can mess with everything else except that. Knowledge will set you free. Knowledge will protect you from harm. You know, if you understand, 10 additional language after Constitution, right? 10 amendments, right, to free speech. When they actually come to you to knock on your home, you can say, no, my amendment says otherwise. Knowledge and understanding the knowledge will protect you. So what I do is I arm the owners, executives, and manager with knowledge. Let me give you a simple example. What do you have budget, right? That's a simple question. Will your company grow next year? Yes, it will. Will there be new people? Yes, there will. Will people move up? Yes. So I go like this. What is your budget for your payroll increase? What is the budget for raises? You know what the response is? Zero. So I go, since you're not accounting for raises, none of you here, anybody else will get a raise. And if you do, it will destroy the budget, right? You should have seen their faces, right? That's fun. So now we're setting a budget for next year with raises in mind. As a section. So I do the simple things in life like career ladders. Wait.
Like what?
Career ladders. Like people.
Oh, career ladders.
Yeah. I saw R's and L's mess up sometimes. But so we teach people this is how you move up. We're redoing the employee manual. We teach them like this is the step to move up from your level to here. This is what you gotta reach to get there. So people are walking in, stupid little manual. But as they read, they get really interested. So I put stuff in there that used to exist in America that doesn't exist anymore. Things that were so part of American culture of businesses. There's a reason why somebody works for a company for 30, 40 years. There's a reason why a company would actually give people who work for them pension instead of 401k. There's all these different reasons, right? People forgot. All I do is bring back integrity to the companies the way and what it can become as it grows.
So, So, like, what's an example of something in that manual?
So, for example, maternity leave. So, you know, when you how would you deal with it? How do you deal with sickness and stuff? And how do you deal with employees who are treating the companies, right? So most of our human resource has become is a how to protect the company from workers versus how to take care of workers, right? So I go back to them and the people and the head and go, well, there might be a reason why. There's a reason why they become like this. And I try to stop that from happening. So they become, but people will still be greedy and still be dumb and all these things, but they'll be for the company instead of against the company. So the mistake will still be made, but it'll be because they want to protect the company, not because they want to kill the company, right? So that's one example. Other example is, you know, how they work. Why would you structure work such a way that you grind people? Shouldn't the work be pleasant? And people go, no, this is the way we go. Well, you want to produce that result, but you're doing it this way, and you got to replace people every 2.7 years. What can we just hold on to 5 more years? It should cost this much more. Okay, well, how can we use them so they make more profits? So it's worth that increase. So like one company right now, they have 60 people who do manufacturing work. But 20 people are now in the company are doing 3D printing. The company is growing at a 26% growth ratio per year. So I told the next owner of the company, who's the son, I charge you of growing the company so much, you can transition all the 60 people to new jobs. Okay, you got to grow at least 3-4 million next year, 5 to 6 million next year. So we're now shifting the company so that we can literally absorb the old workforce into the new system. And we're budgeting for that.
So how are you doing that?
Well, you got to do education and training. You got to take people, teach them digital technology, teach them how to use certain machines. Those people can now, we got to teach them how to do certain administration. Mm-hmm. So we need a budget for training development.
Yeah.
And we got to allocate all that. So we'll be doing that next year.
Now,
Go ahead.
Yeah. How do you, you know, all these things that you come up with, are you looking at numbers? Are you talking to people or both? Like, how do you?
I talk to the owners. I talk to the workers. And they tell me everything.
Oh.
It's just that they may not say it, but I can hear it in what they say, what they don't say. Oh, tell me about your work. What is it like? Oh, thank you. Tell me about so-and-so. How's it like? And such, what kind of gossip do you guys have, you know? I get to hear it all. So now I'm in the environment. I get to see how it got created. And I get to start tweaking from the sideways. So when it starts to occur, it occurs magical because it's not something they don't know. It's something they know. You know, like the receptionist moving up to internal sales and customer service. They may have never experienced that because they're only 26 years old, but there are stories about companies like this, right? Mm-hmm. As a result, they go, oh, this is how it's supposed to be. People literally fall in line because we grew up in American culture, American business, and how it used to be 1980s, 70s, and 60s. Time that I was born, 10, 20 years of age, right? But all of us, inside of us, is this idealized possibility of companies and America that still exist. All I do is, it can be this way right here with you at your job. And they go, okay, I'll do my part.
So, okay. So how do you get them to trust you that they're telling you all this stuff? I mean, is that
I just
your...
Listen. I just listen. I go, tell me about your history of how you got here. Tell the company, and then they just pour it down on me.
Wow.
I guess I got used to it after a while. That's all I know. So they just tell me everything, and I go, okay. Then I started tweaking and making changes with permission from the owners.
Wow. So are you taking notes or are you just storing it in your head? No?
Yeah, because I've been doing this for 34 years. So everything is a pattern. So when they tell me stories, it just falls into a particular pattern. It's almost automatic, unconscious kind of a thing.
But when you first started, how did you do it? How did
a lot
was that harder then?
Lots of notes and research. I used to go to libraries and go to downtown libraries and go to financial sections and crawl there and look through books and stuff to figure stuff out. Because I couldn't tell people I didn't know. Now I know, but at the time I didn't know. So I did a lot of research. So I would consult them for an hour, but I'll be spending 4 hours figuring this stuff out. But after a while, things start to repeat and collide, and then you get to invent and make things up.
Wow. Does it ever get boring or no?
No, it gets exciting. You get calls in the middle of the nights and you get activated and you go things like, you know, I got a call in the middle of COVID, after 6 months of COVID, I got a call in the middle of the night going like, we'd like to hire you. Can you come to this location on this day for an 8 hours conference? Can I ask you what this is? This is for COVID. We would like you to do such and such. Okay. I go, honey, I got a weird call. I ended up building a company called Infinity Health that provided 35,000 kids COVID testing every day.
Oh my God.
And went through a bench. Yeah.
No, go ahead. What were you saying?
No, people just call.
Well, how do they find you? Is it word of mouth?
On Google.
Or?
They find me on Google and they call me. They find me on Yelp and call me. So they go, how do you get these weird, exotic cases? Calls late at night. My cell phone rings. I'm trying to go to bed. They're on the wrong time zone complaining about something. And go like, show up here and do this. Okay.
Wow. And does everybody end up paying you? Or do you ever get stiffed?
I don't get stiff because I'm like an old cash and carry grocery store. So I get paid every month by month on a retainer. So I do the work. And like that. So people go, why are you running your business like that? Well, because that's what I know. And I don't have any receivables. I don't have any payables. I guess I'll handle right there. So I got to live with whatever's left over, right? So I run a very, very, very simple mechanism of a consulting company.
And how long do they keep you on retainer? Forever?
6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years. Longest is about 20-some plus years.
Wow.
That's and cool. some are on our retainers as friends, you know.
Yeah.
I have a client in Brentwood who created Homeless But Not Toothless, and he built, you know, has became really successful. And I've known him for 30 plus years, and he's my friend, and he's not really a client anymore, but I still see him once a quarter and work on some stuff.
And what is that business? Is he a dentist?
He's a dentist, yeah.
Wow.
We were at a Chinese restaurant with this idea of helping homeless people with tooth and stuff. And I remember that because I got loud at the time. But I said, if you're going to do this business for real. And he was true to his word, and he did. And he made a difference in 100,000 people's lives.
So how did he get paid?
He's a dentist. He owns a dental office. He in Brentwood, Concierge Dental is his company.
So he has a regular practice, but then he just decided to help.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he and other dentists got together and built this. It's a big charity, Homeless But Not Toothless. Homeless Not Toothless, yeah. Yeah, so he's done amazing things. I know, I'm blown away by it. So my clients have done some amazing things. I get to be part of that, you know, and I'm grateful.
Wow. And then you also have subs, like people who you're also...
Affiliates. Okay, so this is what happens. Paul comes to me and goes, Robert, I got to go to Austin, Texas. Why? I'm falling in love with this girl. I'm going to marry her. Can she come to you? No, I'm going to go there. And eventually he becomes his own company. He goes to Buffalo, New York, and he goes, I need to start working with you. What happened? I was delivering pizza because I couldn't get a job. And I went into a meeting, and there are two guys are arguing something stupid. So I butt in. I told the answer. And they want to hire me as a consultant. So I'm going to be their consultant now. Knowledge protects you, right?
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So, and then I got clients, affiliates in Toronto because I met Julian Wojtek-Puchinski and he got sick. But I said, let me build a company around you. And we did. So there's now two companies, rscbg.com, Business Training Pro in Toronto, that's growing, and that RSC Sales. It's all theirs. I get a certain percentage of their sales, but affiliates are growing as a result.
And how do they relate to you? Like, what's the relationship of the affiliate?
I am now 61 years old, and they're in their 40s and 30s. So, and Aurelius, yeah, 30s, yeah. So, I guess I'm Stephen now, and they're me.
Yeah. Wow.
And yeah.
You've become the monk.
I become the monk, but I'm married. With a dog.
Oh, okay.
German
okay,
Shepherd. Okay. And a lot of nieces and nephews.
Yeah. All right. So Robert, this has been very, very interesting. I can see why you're so special as a coach. If you were going to, like, what would you want to see in the next 5 years? If your company was just doing its thing, like, what impact on the world would you like
I would
to see?
Love to say that because of my participation and our team's participation, we help 3,000 to 6,000 businesses grow in the United States and the world.
Yeah.
And as a result, they have great families and a lot of fun. Because I think the small business path to freedom and choice. And I don't care about governments, I don't care about politics. I believe people need to have hands, their skills and know-hows to run teams and individuals and groups so they can make a living and be happy. So for me, business is a pathway of, excuse me, let me close this. Business is really a pathway for love, ease, and affluence in the world. And it's a pathway for delight and success. Because having a right business, it gives you so much. And having the right knowledge gives so much possibilities. And you're able to make promises become real.
So it seems, you know, my experience is that a lot of people starting small businesses don't succeed. Are you can provide them with what's missing that they can't see so that they do succeed. It seems like that's a big difference.
Yeah, let me give you a little gift here. All money is promise and request made between people to fulfill upon a particular future. So if something comes about, then you get paid for it because promise was kept. Something doesn't come about, you get to do. A lot of times what happens is people make big promises, they don't get to keep, they gamble on the promises. So the declarations for possibility becomes lies over time. That's why businesses fail. So as a business owner, you have to learn to, number one, provide what people want, and two, be able to keep promises over time again, 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 again. And if you can do that, if you can make a promise, keep a promise, check a promise, and own when things go wrong, you can be a successful business.
So it must be that the promise is defined in a way that it can be kept.
Yes. A lot of small businesses make promises that cannot be kept. And it cannot be kept again, again, again. They keep it once, but then after they burn out. So you want to find what is the business you keep on a regular basis, you know, on a regular basis, and grow on a regular basis. Then it's a joy.
Wow.
And
wow, thank you, Robert.
Thank you. One more thing.
Yeah,
You want to keep make promise and keep a promise in a group of people who need you again, again, and again. Otherwise, you have a really great big thing happen, nothing. And it makes it really hard.
So they don't just need you once. They have to keep needing you?
Yes. Otherwise, you're going to spend more time selling and marketing than doing your craft.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, it sounds like you have an amazing model that works, that is effective, and that you've impacted many, many lives. What, anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, I just want to thank you for being the voice and the possibility for truth and business in your environment, because I think shows like you allow people like us to share and introduce to the communities. And without you, we wouldn't exist in people's awareness from mind or heart. So thank you for causing existence of us in their mind and hearts. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being amazing in what you're doing and what you're doing for the world. So yay.
Thank you
very much.
Okay.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.